The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The ABC News and Washington Post poll found that 56% of Democratic and Democratic-leaning voters want Biden to sit it out in 2024, compared to just 35% who would like to see him run again.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, where do you stand? It's good to be with you today. Good afternoon. I'm Drew Mariani. Where do you stand on the president running again? Right now, he is in Florida, and he is meeting with victims and first responders after Hurricane Ian made its way through. I see Governor DeSantis, of course, standing behind him. It might be an interesting run. You might see in several months DeSantis versus Biden. You know, Biden revealed, supposedly, I don't know if this has been confirmed or not, to Al Sharpton that he's going to run for another term. People are speculating about a lot of things, though, aren't they? I heard somebody say, oh, Hillary Clinton, she said some things that, you know, indicate that she might see this as a good opportunity. Then there are others that saying, well, Michelle Obama could run. And again, you know, I would say, well, what about credentials? What about experience? What about, well, you know, people say, look at Donald Trump. Oh, he was a businessman. But who knows who's going to run in 2024? The midterms are weeks away. They'll be here before you know it. And of course, in time of national tragedy and catastrophe, like we saw with Ian, it's good to see bipartisanship, you know, to see Governor DeSantis there, a Republican, standing behind Joe Biden, who's now addressing the country. And I'd like to see more of that. We can argue over budget. We can argue over health care. We can argue over immigration. We can argue over a lot of different issues. But we are, you know, one nation, united, both red and blue in this country. We're one people. We're the United States of America. And, you know, I hope we can find that leadership that will bring unity. I think it's one of the reasons Joe Biden made it into office. He ran, and I thought it was a brilliant campaign. He ran as a unifier, right? I didn't think he'd get elected just because he never left his basement for so long, you know, and his rallies didn't show much of a turnout. But people really, they want unity. I mean, it was indicative of what we saw. So we'll see what happens. Coming up a little bit later, though, I'll fill you in on some new data. We can talk about it. I'd love to get your take on it, too. And feel free to join me anytime. The number's 888-914-9149. Dr. Paul Kengor is going to be joining me here today. And, you know, we'll get his take and his analysis on this as well. But well, let's talk to president. I was going to share with you a little bit of news that I a little bit of sports news. I'll work that in a little bit later. An interesting record was broken, and the recipient of that that ball now potentially a multimillionaire. I'll fill you in. But the president, as we know, or at least as he claims, he likes to run under the title that he's Catholic. Right. And as a Catholic, I'd love to see a good Catholic president, to be honest with you, somebody who stood on the platform, the ideals, the principles of our Catholic faith. And again, look, I'm trying not to be partisan here. I do want to look at where the president stands on this. And you can sound off if you'd like as well. But I'm just trying to be objective and honest. And I think it's why you listen. President Biden has consistently taken actions against the church. He's continually and very consistently operated against its teachings, right? We see this on a litany of different platforms, and we've been through it many, many times. So his administration's coming out now with a rule that would force doctors and healthcare providers to go along with people whose delusion makes them think that they're the opposite sex. Unfortunately, you know, they're going to be the victim of mutilation and sterilization and a lot of trauma. I've spoken to people who've gone through this surgery, and they say it was the biggest mistake of their life. They just Walt Heyer is a man. Do a quick search for the book Sex Change Regret. Sexchangeregret.com is a website. If you feel that tendency or you know somebody, that'll be a tremendous resource. It could save you a lot of agony. Along with that, you know, the president has been pushing abortion. We know that, right? Even after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. And those are just a few of the things. But it's the economic issues right now that apparently are driving Catholic voters' dislike for this current administration. EWTN published their second of three surveys, and they do this with Real Clear Politics. They get the opinion, it's a pretty big group, opinion of about 1,500 Catholics. Does not look good. I'm going to give you a quick, I'll give you the cliff notes here. I'll give you a spoiler. Does not look good for the White House or Democrats in Congress. When asked about the president's job performance, 52% of those who were polled said that they disapprove. And that was split between 5% saying they disapprove and a whopping 47% saying that they strongly disapprove. 46% said that they approve, and they were split 32% approving, 42% strongly approving. I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you. I hope you can follow all this. But the gap between the strongly approving and the strongly disapproving, just to give you the thumbnail of it, it's pretty wide. There's a big chasm. It's large. Interesting thing, though, that came out of this, the president's support and the support of Democrats in general, guess what group it's falling in? All the people coming across the border, Hispanics. It is falling amongst that demo. Half of Hispanic Catholics say they approve. Nearly 47% say they disapprove. And there's a virtual tie among Hispanics, Catholics for the party, which will receive their votes for Congress. And that's a big change from past years. A lot of other issues, and we can get into them right now. But let me welcome to the conversation Dr. Paul Kengor, a regular contributor here, professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, and the author of the book, The Devil and Karl Marx. It's one of many of his books. Doctor, it's good to have you back. Welcome.
Yeah, hey, Drew. Good to be back. Thanks.
Boy, well, first of all, let's start with the president down in Florida. I mean, what do you make of that? I think it's nice to see some bipartisanship, don't you?
Yeah, sure. And, you know, DeSantis has been gracious and charitable about it. And you know, I haven't seen anybody trying to score political points with this. And if Donald Trump was in, was president right now, people will be trying to find a way to score political points. And of course, look at what they did at George W. Bush with Hurricane Katrina. I mean, that was one of the nastiest things I've ever seen in my life. It was absolutely shocking. I mean, if they could have blamed Bush for standing on the shore with, fanning the hurricane, they would have done it. It was unbelievable. So it's good to see it. And you might also see there between those two a showdown for 2024, Biden and DeSantis. In fact, if I had to predict, I think that's probably who it will be. It's going to depend on Donald Trump and whether or not Trump won. And actually, Drew, if Trump could actually win the nomination, I can't tell you how many people I've talked to, including people who like Trump, who have said, he needs to move aside now, and it's time for someone else to come in. And the man's just too divisive. It's time for somebody like DeSantis. And Biden, you're right, has told people that he's planning to run again in 2024. Now, how old will he be, Drew? I think he'll be 81,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. 81 years old. And I don't mean this in a mean way. Everyone knows it. He doesn't seem all that sharp. He seems pretty slow. And of course, the question would be, as you said, if Biden's not the nominee, who in the world's it going to be? They don't want Kamala Harris. That's very clear. Who's next? Who? Charlie Schumer? Nancy Pelosi?
Newsom?
I don't know.
Newsom
in California.
Who are the
right.
What candidates? You got the guys that normally run. You've got Buttigieg. You got Booker. You've got Klobuchar. You got those names that we saw last round. But I don't think they're going to resonate. I had heard, though, that, and it was speculation. I think people were grasping for this, that Hillary sees a very divided country who's going to come in as more of a neutral figure and would run, and they thought she might have a shot. Some people speculated. I don't know if Hillary Clinton will ever run again. Do you think she will?
I don't think so. I mean, you're right. People are talking about it, and she seems to see herself as this kind of force of moderation. But as somebody who wrote a whole book on her life and on her faith, she's done nothing but move farther and farther to the left over the years. I mean, at one point, when I wrote that book, Drew, and it was on the faith of Hillary Clinton, and I used to surprise people by saying, well, she considers herself an old-fashioned Methodist. And people would laugh. Oh. And I'd say, well, for example, she supports traditional marriage. She's against gay marriage. And they'd say, really? And I'd say, yeah. Well, she flipped on that in 2012. Yeah, she's now gone totally in on all the LGBTQ stuff. And she, even when she was in the Senate, joined forces with Rick Santorum for the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. She was a great defender of religious freedom. She flipped on all of that stuff, all of it. So she's just moved to the left like Joe Biden has. So I can't imagine her. I can't see her getting it. It's just totally wide open. In a way, you would expect, okay, who's the person that came in second in 2020? Bernie Sanders.
Right.
Who also came in second in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
He got 13 million votes in the Democratic primary, a socialist,
right. In
2016. Hillary got 17 million. Donald Trump got 14 million in the Republican primary. So Bernie got almost as many votes in the Democratic primary as Trump got in the Republican primary. So you would think that would make him a front runner, but he's old. And I think Bernie might be older than Biden. I'm not sure about that. I have to look that up. So it's probably not Bernie. Then the next person it would usually go to would be the vice president. But again, people don't like Kamala Harris. So Democrats might be stuck with Joe Biden.
What about Buttigieg?
Yeah, I mean, his name is out there, but I don't see what his appeal is. And he's been what, transportation secretary?
Yeah. Before that,
during
mayor.
During a time of terrible gas prices and all kinds of other problems in the country. He really hasn't done much at all. And the only time you really hear about him is when he's apparently absent and not really talking, people wanting to know, what does Buttigieg think about him?
Yeah, Maggie just found...
It's hard to imagine him.
Maggie just found the age of Sanders, 81 years old right now. So, you know...
81 right now, yeah.
If he was to do 4 years...
He had a heart attack in 2020, didn't he?
Yeah,
I believe.
My other question, my observation is, I think the American people are, you know, they put their toe in the water of these socialistic agendas. And they're saying they're not working. I mean, you take a look at the suffering economically of so many in this country. Do you think people want to go to something a little bit more neutral, a little bit more center? Or do you think that the lane that Joe Biden is now driving down, the one that Bernie Sanders has always been on, is one that resonates with voters?
Well, I don't know, but I never thought I'd see 75% of Americans supporting same-sex marriage.
I agree.
Right? I never thought that, in fact... Liberals right now, they're all worried about the new Supreme Court with Obergefell being overturned and marriage being sent back to the states. I would tell them, you got nothing to worry about, man. You send it back to the states, every single one of them is going to approve it.
Right.
Right. I mean, who's not? Maybe a few southern states. So I never thought that I would see that kind of a majority. I never thought I would see 100 different so-called gender options.
I know.
I never thought I'd see, laws not allowing parents to intervene to stop their 13-year-old daughter from having her breast surgically removed because she declares herself a boy. I never thought I'd see any of the crazy stuff in this country. So is the flirtation with socialism over? According to polls, actually, no. But I don't know. Other than Bernie, I don't see a socialist Democrat running,
right. But
I see a lot of culturally radical Democrats running. In fact, pretty much all of them on the abortion issue and all the other cultural moral issues.
What other candidates? Somebody just threw out to me here in the studio. Michelle Obama. Her name has been floated around, too, as a possible run. What do you think about her?
Yeah, I mean, why not run Aaron Judge, right?
Yeah, right.
The guy's got 62 home runs and has never held elected office. Michelle Obama, let me take it seriously. She was first lady. She's very well liked.
Mm-hmm.
Her book sold an enormous number of copies. But she's never had elected office, and usually that's a criteria. Now, Donald Trump totally smashed that. He had never been elected to anything either. And Michelle's husband, he had not been elected for very long. He wasn't in the U.S. Senate for very long. But he at least had probably, I'd have to add it up, but at least a decade's worth of time in the U.S. Senate and the Illinois Senate. So she really doesn't have much experience. But with Democrats, I'm sure they'd all vote for her. She'd probably be pretty competitive, but I don't mean this in an insulting way. But what does she know about foreign policy?
Right. No, I agree.
Right? You know what does she know about energy deregulation? I mean, these elections ought to be about policy, more than personalities. And she's a very smart woman, and you've accomplished and great educational background. But she's not coming from much of an area of policy expertise. I mean, Pete Buttigieg has been was at least elected mayor. Yep. And, you know, and Elise has had a job in the cabinet the last couple years so far. So he's at least had some experience in that regard. She really doesn't have
That. That's so true. Hey, let's talk about these polls, though. So I want to get your take on this poll that was recently done by Real Clear Politics and EWTN. The previous poll, if I remember correctly, it showed a kind of slight majority favoring Biden. And that's now changed. Is this what we're now seeing on a national scale as well? And why do you think these numbers are beginning to shift against him?
Yeah, well, he's unpopular, and he has been pretty much from the beginning. Now, about 6 months ago, his approval rating actually went below 40, which is really, really hard to do. It's hard to get under 40. I watched Obama for 8 years very closely. I think he hit 39 once for about a week, and then never again did he ever go out of the 40s. Donald Trump was often pretty low, but usually at least held low 40s, which is why, you know, Trump got what, probably like 46% of the vote. Mm-hmm. both times. Yep. But Biden's numbers are not good. Would they be good enough to win against somebody like Donald Trump? I'd have to say yes, because he beat Trump before, and Trump has never won the popular vote. Yep. Could he beat someone like DeSantis? I don't think so. I think somebody like DeSantis would do really well. And, you know, we just went through all these different who could possibly be the Democrat other than Biden.
Right.
There's a bunch of really good Republicans. Aside from DeSantis, Kristi Noem, Nikki Haley, yep. Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, really that whole big group of a dozen to 16 that ran back in 2016 when Donald Trump got the nomination, they're all still around.
Yep.
And the Marco Rubio will probably get reelected. He should easily, I think. Mm-hmm. In Florida, he could run again. And with those numbers changing with Latino voters, that helps Republicans. So
yeah, I like a DeSantis Rick Scott ticket. I really like this guy, Rick Scott.
Yeah,
I like his background. Right. I like his message. I like his humility. I like what he's had to do. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, look, we have the midterms right ahead of us. And who knows how that's going to shake out. You know, probably 4 months ago, 3 months ago, I was saying it was going to be a bloodbath. What do you see happening, Doctor? Because things have changed. I mean, in the world of politics, you know, a month is an eternity. We're still a month away. Your expectations for how things will shake out.
Yeah, well, I saw a bloodbath too a few months ago, and it looked like the Republicans were going to get their biggest gain in the House of Representatives, maybe in history. And I think even bigger than what they did in 1994 with Newt Gingrich and the Contract with America. But then the numbers came a little bit closer, and Democrats started pulling up, you know, higher in the polls. But right now, the Republicans, I think, are at a little bit of an advantage again. And I'll tell you the case right here in Pennsylvania. We've had John Fetterman, this really odd candidate in the state of Pennsylvania. I think you know who he is, right? I mean, he's the guy that wears the hoodie, has the tattoos.
The goatee,
he's 6'8", he's 300 pounds. He you know, flies outside the state lieutenant governor's office, his rainbow flag and his pro-legalization of marijuana flag. He's a Bernie Sanders Democrat.
Oh, yeah.
And he's been leading Mehmet Oz in the polls since May. You know, one point was ahead by like 10 points. The latest polls look like Fetterman's leading Oz by maybe only about two.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, where someone like Oz can catch Fetterman, and, you know, there most other tight races in other states, the Republican and Democrat are like virtually even, or the Republicans up +1, +2. I would say that any poll that has the Republican either up or within 3 to 4 points, because turnout is still going to favor the Republicans, you could place your money on the Republican in those races. So the Republicans are going to take the House. If I had to bet, I think they'll take the Senate too. It's only a matter of how much, but you have how many seats. But 5 or 6 months ago, you were looking at a bloodbath, an absolute landslide. I think now you're looking at a Republican takeover, not as much, but bigger now than maybe it was even a month ago. And like you said, Drew, a lot can happen in 4 weeks. Yeah. And Russia right now, yeah. The whole thing going on with Russia, there were 4 explosions last week in the Russian Nord Stream pipeline. No one knows what caused them, if it was sabotage, if it was external, if it was internal. The German finance minister said Germany is not going to have enough energy this winter. And if that happens, that's going to have global ripple effects on the economy. Of course, the election is not in December or January. It's in the first week of November. But if something like that, if Russia explodes in the next few weeks and creates some real problems for Biden and the Democrats, that would further help the Republicans.
Plus gas prices, as you know. I mean, Saudi Arabia, they're going to be cutting back on the millions of barrels of oil that they were pumping. The Strategic Petroleum Reserve here is no longer going to be tapped, and they're expecting gasoline prices to continue to go up. And that's always bad news before an election for people. Now, I'm sure they'll try to hold it off as close as they can to the election, but we'll see what happens. Boy, it's a mess, to say the least. You know, it's obvious, Doctor, that the economy is what's driving, you know, a lot of voters' decisions, probably the top of the list. Is the tie between economics and, let's say, political policy that strong? Because, you know, we're going to be hearing soon, and I'm sure the president can't control gas prices as they start to go back up again. How do you see that shaking out?
Well, it's going to be hard for Biden to try to blame something else. I mean, he would probably try to blame Russia again. He was bailed out last time by tapping into the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, but there's only so much you can tap into a reserve, right? I mean, you know, reserves are reserves. They're limited. And at some point, if he's not going to drill domestically, you know, here I am in Pennsylvania, your home state, Drew, where we're the king of fracking,
yeah, right,
for the whole world. And you know, people like Biden and Fetterman and others are the complete opposite of Donald Trump and DeSantis and others on that issue.
Right.
So if we're not going to drill domestically, if we're not going to get oil domestically, those prices are going to go up. And yep, maybe the only thing working to Biden's advantage is that election is on November 8th and not January 8th.
Yeah, that's
because
true.
In the middle of winter, man, this could get, the prices could get really ugly. There could be blackouts in places like Newsom's California,
yep,
and it could be blackouts all over Europe. It could get really ugly.
Let's do this, Doc. I'll take a couple quick calls before we run out of time. If you want to get in, it's 888-914-9149. Speaking with author and professor, Dr. Paul Kingor. Joe in, I guess it's Florida. Good afternoon. Good to have you with us.
Hello?
Hi, Joe. Go right ahead.
Yes, Joe. I'm in Wilton Manor, Florida, and I'm listening to your call. I'm a Republican. I've been with friends since his first debate in 2016. Ron DeSantis and all the Republicans in Florida are great, but Rick Scott, I hate him.
Why is that?
I'm sorry to say that. He caused my mother and father to lose their house to my son, my brother, and myself. And what he did, we had it, it was in foreclosure because 2008, big problems, and when Lance was going on, and I had lawyers, and all of a sudden he changed the law. Yeah. He said, just let them houses go. Forget it. It's been going on too long.
All right. Joe, I'm having trouble hearing you. I apologize. I think I got most of what you had to say. So, Doctor, I don't know if you made that out at all. He's a Floridian, if I can get that out of my mouth. Big supporter of Trump and DeSantis, but doesn't like Rick Scott. I guess in 2008, when the crisis went down, their house went into foreclosure, and apparently he changed some sort of law, and it compromised, you know, Joe and his family's livelihood. That's really unfortunate. Joe, I'm sorry really to hear that. I really am. Carl in Providence, Rhode Island. Good afternoon. You're on with Dr. Kingor.
Okay, just so you know, I remember when Bill Clinton ran against George Bush, he said his famous quote, "It's the economy, stupid." I think the Democrats are going to find that out in November, yeah.
All right. Thanks, Carl. Good point, Doctor, right? It is the economy, isn't it? That's the number one driver.
It is. Yeah. It's always the economy, stupid. That was the famous phrase by James Carville. who was Bill Clinton's advisor back in 1992. And, you know, they did that. There was the George H.W. Bush recession of 1990-91, which by 1992 was completely over. But Bill Clinton and Al Gore just banged that drum over and over again. You know, Dan Rather, Peter Jennings, and Tom Brokaw all banged that drum over and over and over again. And, you know, they managed to hold down public perception of the economy, consumer confidence, right into November 1992. And that and a little guy from Texas named H. Ross Perot ended 12 years of a Republican run on the White House. If it wasn't for all of that, you'd have never heard of Hillary Rodham Clinton.
So true.
So, but yeah, it's the economy, stupid. It always is. And right now it's a little better than it was 6 months ago. But again, a lot of that could change, especially watch closely what's happening in Russia the next few weeks.
Yeah, we'll go to Sacramento, California next. Kevin, thanks for waiting. You are on the air. Good afternoon.
Yes, thank you. I'm curious as to why you both dismiss Trump as a viable candidate. I mean, the contrast between the Trump presidency in just about every which way from now is stark. And I think people will see that. And Trump is the only outsider that can galvanize people. Yeah. He's got his flaws. There's no doubt about that. But you guys are brushing over what was pretty obviously some kind of tomfoolery, I'll call it, with the election. I've been watching elections since I was a kid, 9 years old, with Nixon, and I've never seen numbers switch in the middle of the night the way they did this last election. So I think Trump is a viable candidate, and I think that you're dismissing him as premature.
All right, hey, Kevin, thank you. Doctor, I only have a moment or two left, so I'm going to give you the final thoughts on that as well when it comes to Trump.
Yeah. Well, I live in Pennsylvania, and I saw a switch in votes unlike anything I've ever seen in my life, which I thought was literally impossible. Yep. You know, a 600,000 vote lead just vanished. But I don't think Trump can get over 46% of the vote. And I think that if Trump gets nominated, he's going to lose again, because more people hate, and I mean hate him, than like him. And you need to go to somebody who's more likable, who can get 50% of the vote.
Kevin, thank you. I appreciate the call. And we'll see what happens. Trump may be the candidate. He may want to run. He may throw his hat in. And you know what? He may get the nomination. Boy, that'll be an interesting round two, with Joe Biden and Donald Trump going at it again. We'll see what happens. Doctor, you and I will be covering it, I know, in the days ahead. I'm grateful for your time and your contribution. If people want to get plugged into you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, thanks, Drew. Well, I write for the American Spectator, spectator.org, and also check me out at the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College. Our website there is faithandfreedom.com.
Sounds great. That's Dr. Paul Kengor. Check out his book, A Pope and a President, and many of the other ones as well. I need to take a short break. When I come back, though, I will change gears. We had a guest scheduled a little earlier in the week who I wanted to bring back because this is a huge story right now. A lot of young girls in particular are coming up with these strange tics, and a lot of doctors are now saying it's being caused by TikTok. I don't know whether your teen or your grandchild is on that type of social media. You may want to stay tuned. I'll bring you up to speed on the latest findings with Gene Twenge right after this.
All the news and issues of the day. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
This hour sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Didn't know, is this Tourette? And it became clear, no, it wasn't.
Usually Tourette syndrome comes on gradually at an early age, affecting four times as many boys as girls. But these new patients with sudden onset tics were teenagers, and predominantly girls by a factor of 20 to 1.
Some of the tics were similar, but some of them were definitely different, such as quite violent movements of the arms, sometimes hitting themselves in the chest. And also the vocalizations, so the repetitive noises, were different. Rather than just simple noises, there were much more complicated words and phrases, which were quite bizarre, and I hadn't really heard tics like that before. It's very unusual, and that's why it was so noticeable.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
That was testimony from some doctors in Australia who have, well, they've been witnessing what they're saying is a dramatic uptick of young women who have severe onset Tourette-like symptoms from using TikTok. I played that audio a couple days ago. We were scheduled to speak to Gene Twenge, and for some reason, there was a disconnect there. And I just think this story is an important one. You know, social media, and I've said this, I shared this with you before. I shared with you the fact that I really think sociologists and psychologists in the days ahead, years ahead, potentially, are going to look back and they're going to see a line of demarcation. And that's the advent of these smartphones and tablets and all the social media, because I really think there's a direct correlation with the rise of anxiety of our kids. I think there's a direct correlation with depression. I think we've seen, you know, everything from online bullying now to potentially some scientists saying facial tics. There was a girl named Kayla Johnson. She graduated from school down in Texas, from Sugarland, Texas. And it was a story in the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago that I had seen, made me want to talk about it. She's only 18 years of age. And 2 years ago, this girl began to develop tics. Not like, you know, not like a muscle near her eye going into spasms, you know, but she would get major ones. It's not like a little twitch in the eye. It's like it's a big spasm, major ones, right? And they got worse. And she started taking medication for an inherited connective tissue disorder. And she was also dealing with anxiety. She was dealing with ADD. And eventually she and her parents, they went to a specialist. And a specialist down in Texas, some children's hospital. And they asked her this question. I was struck by it. I don't know why they did, but they asked her about social media use. And she said when the pandemic shut down, she wanted to find out what other people were doing. So she went to YouTube and she did a search for how kids were dealing with online learning. And you know this. You probably have dealt with it in your own family. There was a totally different environment for learning. So that search led her to tons of other YouTubes and YouTube videos, I should say, and then ultimately to TikTok. And then she watched compilations of these kids' videos. And the specialist explained that it may actually be TikTok that was causing her problem. And she's not alone. Uncontrollable movements in kids, it usually comes from something called Tourette syndrome. I talked about this earlier in the week with you. I mean, Tourette's, I think, hits boys more than it does girls. It starts when they're young, around 5 or 6. But what Tourette specialists started seeing was teenage girls, right? Not 5 or 6-year-old boys, but teenage girls coming in with these sudden onset tics. And, you know, some girls, I don't know why they do this. They throw eggs against a wall or their arms would just hit somebody else uncontrollably and they couldn't control their mouths. And, you know, with Tourette's, kids might blurt out like 10 obscene words. But these girls, as I was sharing, they would let out a string, isn't even a word, but they would string out 100 of these obscene words, you know, at a time repeatedly. So here's where this is where the research got, I think, really interesting. It got researchers' attention. This didn't happen just in the States. Didn't just happen, you know, you hear and you would think, oh, well, maybe this is an American thing. No, it's happening all over the world. The Atlantic, they were reporting that the Tourette's research community is small. It's pretty tight-knit. And they were talking to one another. They saw the same thing happening in every corner of the globe. So it raised questions about, raise their suspicions that this wasn't something physical, but rather more psychological. And I thought, who can speak to this? Who knows this better? Well, Gene Twenge does. She's a professor of psychology at San Diego State University. I've had her on many, many times, and I'll recommend her book. I often do. It's called iGen. You can just do a quick search for that. I always tease her because I've mentioned this before. It's the longest title I've ever had to read. But I love it. Doctor, it's good to have you. Can I read your? I want to read your whole title. Here's the title of her book, iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood, and What That Means for the Rest of Us, period. I love it. That holds the record. Find her at Gene Twenge. That's TWENGE.com. And Doctor, good to have you back. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
This is a crazy story. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a physician. But I really do think social media is having an impact on the development of this younger generation. I'm not quite sure what the drivers are. Maybe you can help. Why would social media, this is the thing that got me about the TikTok story, why would that be translating into physical outbursts? You know, why would it be manifesting in terms of Twitch?
You know, it's interesting. So this is something that's called social contagion. And it used to happen face-to-face. Teenage girls are the most susceptible group. They're very socially connected to each other, influenced by each other. There's a case about 10 years ago in upstate New York of similar type of thing that everybody couldn't figure out what was wrong with this group of girls. And it turned out they were all, you know, connected to each other at school, and they had these strange texts. What's happening now is social media comes into the mix, and it's not just somebody you know from school. This can be someone across the world, and there's these influences on people and these social contagions that can happen online as well as in person.
Yeah, it's bizarre. So you say it's social contagion more than anything else here. What is it about TikTok then that would call something like this? I seem to see that as a common denominator. You know, is it the, you know, the length of the video, the platform, the format? I mean, what do you think might be the reason behind that?
It's likely just that's where teens are now. I mean, TikTok is the most popular platform for them. It is videos, so that may pull more, you know, for these types of behaviors. It's hard to say. You know, we're still trying to figure out, as psychologists, the impact of different platforms, and that's not entirely clear right now.
Yeah, it's just so weird. It attacks the entire body. You know, and again, the symptoms they think could be, and maybe they'll find another reason for it, triggered by repeatedly watching social media, you know, and video. And then kids start displaying these tics. And the problem, this one physician I read said, you know, she says it's not related to a neurological structure abnormality or a hardware problem with the brain. And there's no quick fix for this. What are parents doing? If parents start to see this, you know, and their children developing these tics, what should they do? Do you cut off social media? I'm assuming you see a professional about this, but what advice would you give?
Yeah, I mean, definitely see a professional. You know, rule out anything, any kind of systemic disorder or anything physical, or if it's maybe that could certainly be some other sort of psychological disorder. So figure that out first. But then, yeah, I mean, there's really a growing consensus that especially our youngest people should not be on social media. Many parents don't know that the minimum age to have a social media account is 13. Yeah. That's under a law passed by Congress called COPPA. But there are tons of 10, 11, 12-year-olds who are on social media. Even 13 is really too young. That age was not chosen for any developmental reason. It was a compromise, you know, with internet companies. So there are some folks, and I'm one of them now, calling for potentially not allowing social media for those under 18 at all. That is one possible solution to this problem.
Yeah, wow, I don't know how that would ever happen. I agree, and I think it's a great idea, because I think you would see a radical change in the psychological anomalies that we're now seeing among so many of these kids. Do you think anxiety that kids are experiencing today, because there seems to be, I don't remember this when I was growing up, and maybe it was never identified, I don't know, but I've never seen the level of anxiety and social anxiety today, you know, I've never seen anything like it, you know, like I'm seeing it today, I should say. You know, and again, I'm trying to look for reasons. What changed? You know, what could be facilitating this? What do you think is driving the heightened level of anxiety and depression amongst young adults and kids today?
Well, I mean, that's something I've looked at for a long time. So I've looked at, you know, mental health trends across the generations. And, you know, for millennials, some stuff that wasn't so great, but there were other trends that were actually improving. So that would be people who were young, say, in the 2000s. But then around 2012, pretty much every indicator of mental health among young people started to trend more negative. Depression doubled between 2011 and 2019, so even before the pandemic. Anxiety went up, happiness went down, even more serious outcomes, emergency room admissions for self-harm behaviors, things like cutting, quadrupled among 10 to 14-year-old girls. Yeah. The suicide rate went up. So, and notice, you know, some of these are behaviors. They're things that can't be explained by the idea that, say, oh, people are just more willing to talk about things now. That doesn't really explain what's going on. And then came the pandemic, which also, you know, heightened a lot of these issues. But it didn't start with the pandemic. It was there starting about 10 years ago.
Wow. My guest today, Dr. Gene Twenge. I'm going to take a short break, doctor. When you come back, if you want to join us, we only have a few moments with her. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. The Chapel of the Divine Mercy is also about 15 minutes away. We'll pray that, so feel free to dial in and get in line for that. But if you're just joining us, we're taking a look at the rise or the impact, really, of social media on our kids. And one of the latest reports coming out is that TikTok maybe causing twitches. Strange stuff. Our conversation continues.
This hour sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
Well, it's good to be back with you. Chaplet is coming up in about 10 minutes. Feel free to join us for that. If you want to get in, you have just a few moments with Dr. Gene Twenge today. We're taking a look at some news being reported in the Wall Street Journal, and scientists around the world now seeing some strange behaviors coming from those who are using social media, in particular TikTok. But the doctor has seen this for quite a while. And Dr. Twenge, first of all, thank you for being here with me. During the break, we were talking a little bit, and you said that in 2012, there was a very significant change. What happened in 2012? Share that with everyone.
So that's when teen depression started going up. And it's also when, around the end of that year, the majority of Americans owned a smartphone, and probably the most relevant. It's also around when social media use among teens moved from optional to virtually mandatory. Because just a few years before, say 2009, about half of teens were using social media every day. So if you could be on it or you could not be on it. Yep. And then around 2012, it started to hit, what, 75%? And at that point, if you're in high school, you know, if you're 1 out of 5, 1 out of 4 is not doing something, you're left out. You're the odd person out. So it became something that almost all teens were doing.
Wow, fascinating stuff. Let's grab a call or two. Only have a few moments. We'll go to Bonnie, who's listening in Franklin, Wisconsin. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was just wondering if this phenomenon is like the what they call the Havana syndrome. I don't know if you know anything about that, but it was noted on 60 Minutes a couple of weeks ago, where these government people were in Havana, or, you know, close to it, and they heard a sound like the sound, that high-pitched sound of cicadas, you know, in the summertime. It goes ee! Anyway, they came up with some really bad problems because of that. And I was wondering if this syndrome is kind of like that syndrome.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different. Doctor, you could probably speak to this better than me. With the Havana syndrome, didn't it cause hearing loss and other problems? And they weren't sure what was happening, but they did think it was a very high frequency, you know, audio beam or something that was beamed at the U.S. Embassy and at other U.S. officials at the time. And we've seen it in other places outside of Cuba. But what do you know, doctor? What can you share?
Well, I remember that case, and I remember early on there was the suggestion that it could have been social contagion, and then they found evidence that it actually was something that was occurring. And, you know, that's always the difficulty in these things, that when it's something that's maybe just outside perception, you have to get that evidence, because otherwise that's a theory people come up with, that it might be social contagion.
Yeah. So, hey, thank you very much, Bonnie. Appreciate the call. Yeah, the Havana syndrome is just this alleged set of medical symptoms with unknown causes, you know, and it happens fundamentally to a lot of U.S. government officials and military personnel who are abroad. And the symptoms range, they say, from ringing in the ears to, I guess, doctor, could be as severe as pain or even cognitive difficulty. So I don't know how much they've researched this. I'm sure our intelligence agencies have looked into it. We'll see what they ultimately come up with, because need to keep everybody safe. We'll grab another telephone call. Margie is listening to us in Austin, Texas. Hi, Margie.
Hi, Drew. I find this really interesting. I'm a retired therapist and a grandmother, and I'm interested because I've got a 18-year-old granddaughter who's done very poorly since COVID and the disruption to school. But as I see this playing out with my grandkids, I just wanted to share that it seems like it's more overt than just the fact that they're on TikTok. Yeah. I think the girls, one of the things our society is telling young people is to get attention, almost any way you can. And so they're watching other young girls on TikTok with these symptoms, and they're seeing the attention. And the more they watch, the more the algorithm sends them more and more videos of the same thing, so that the kids get the impression it's like an epidemic. they think, you know, that it's not this atypical strain, you know, very rare disorder, but that, you know, this is something common. And psychologically, I'm sure they don't want to be sick, but, you know, they want attention.
Great insight. I love that. Dr. Twenge, I'll let you respond.
Those algorithms on TikTok are one of the things that make it so addictive. And also, that's how social contagion works. You know, it's something that, it looks like everybody's doing this, and then it catches on. So I think that's exactly right.
Hey, Margie, thank you. I'm delighted to have you.
You're welcome.
Call in and share.
I love what you guys do. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You know, the social contagion, doctor, too. I guess, do we see this with school shooters? Because quite often when there's one school shooting, there seems to be a flurry of them that follow. And that's one of the reasons I think they stop identifying who the shooter is. I mean, we want to acknowledge, you know, who they are, give them any sort of notoriety, because so often we see these other events take place. What are the other areas where you see the social contagion outside of social media?
Yeah, well, you know, it happens a lot. There's different stages to it, too. I mean, you could think of, you know, very innocuous examples of kids that age. Everybody starts wearing a particular type of jeans. They all have to start wearing that. It's just that kids at that age are herd animals. They like the idea of standing out, but they don't actually want to stand out. They want to fit in with what everybody else is doing. Right. That's one of the things that happens with social media, too, because that's where everybody is communicating now. And so here's the other thing I think is sometimes ignored in this. Even kids who aren't on social media are influenced if they're in a school where everybody's on social media. So it's not just what your kid is doing, it's what their friends are doing. I mean, any parent of a teenager knows that. I've got two teenagers and a younger one myself. So you see this, that's what their friends are doing has such a big influence on them. And that's one of the ways that social media has a big impact. Even if they're like, well, I'm not going to use it, if other people are using it and that's the way people communicate, then they're left out if they don't use it. So they can't win. That's what teens tell me. They feel like they can't win.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I hope things will change. I don't know how we do that. Maybe your idea to limit social media to 18 might be a good thing. I think it's just a good cautionary note for all parents. You know, when my kids were young, this was all relatively new. You know, if I was raising children today, I certainly would govern, you know, how much media they consume and certainly what they're exposed to at a young age. It's constantly changing. Doctor, I want to thank you for your time. Your book, iGen, Why Today's Superconnected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood and What It Means for the Rest of Us. Where can people get that? I'm assuming genetwenge.com, but is it available at major bookstores? How can people get connected?
Yeah, indeed it is. So pretty much Amazon or your local bookstore probably will have it.
All right, so check for iGen, I-G-E-N, and Dr. Gene's last name is spelled T-W-E-N-G-E, so Twenge. Hey, we'll catch up again soon. Thank you for being here. I always appreciate your insights.
Thanks very much.
All right. It's about 3 minutes, about 2 minutes before the top of the hour. We will pray the chaplet coming up here in just a moment as well. And I just want to say, I think today is kind of a special day to do this. It is the anniversary. Actually, it's the feast of St. Faustina. It was on this day in 1938 that God called her home. And she was the first saint of the new millennium. Pope John Paul II canonized her in the year 2000, making her that first saint. And of course, she is, I think we owe such a great debt of gratitude to her for her yes to God and this revelation of divine mercy. We are about to pray the chaplet, the prayer that the Lord gave to her. And of course, I'll take your calls. If you want to join me, it's 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You know, St. Faustina promised that after her death, her mission would continue. That's what she said, that she would pull aside the veil of heaven so that you and that me, we would no longer doubt the goodness of God, and that she would intercede in a very, very powerful way. So I'm going to hold her to her promise. All right. Let's ask her to intercede for whatever intentions you might have. We'll pray the chaplet on this great feast day when I return. Stay with me.